I'm Korva Coleman, National Public Radio in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from this and other NPR member stations. Contributors include the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, supporting public understanding of technology, industry, and economic growth.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
Sadalam, sadalam, átkozott gyötrelem.
The English Patient is up for 12 Oscars, including Best Picture and Best Director. The 1992 novel that it's based on is now on the bestseller list. My guests are Michael Ondaatje, who wrote the novel, and Anthony Minghella, who wrote the screenplay and directed the film. They're joining us from the NPR Bureau in London. Minghella made many changes to Ondaatje's story, but both the novel and the movie are set in World War II and tell the story of how the war damages the lives of several people. The story begins with a man who falls from the sky when his plane is shot down. He is burned beyond recognition but survives. The nurse who takes care of him becomes obsessed with the mystery of his identity. The story alternates between the present and the past, between the Sahara Desert and Italy, as the characters' lives, romances, and betrayals unfold. Let's start with a passage from the opening of the novel, read by Michael Ondaatje, describing the nurse Hannah caring for the English patient.
Every 4 days, she washes his black body, beginning at the destroyed feet. She wets a washcloth and, holding it above his ankles, squeezes the water onto him, looking up as he murmurs, seeing his smile. Above the shins, the burns are worst, beyond purple, bone. She has nursed him for months, and she knows the body well, the penis sleeping like a seahorse, the thin, tight hips. Hip bones of Christ, she thinks. He's her despairing saint. He lies flat on his back, no pillow, looking up at the foliage painted onto the ceiling, its canopy of branches, and above that, blue sky. She pours calamine in stripes across his chest, where he is less burned, where she can touch him. She loves the hollow below the lowest rib, its cliff of skin. Reaching his shoulders, she blows cool air onto his neck, and he mutters, "What?" she asks, coming out of her concentration. He turns his dark face with its gray eyes towards her. She puts a hand into her pocket. She unskins a plum with her teeth, withdraws the stone, and passes the flesh of the fruit into his mouth. He whispers again, dragging the listening heart of the young nurse beside him to wherever his mind is, into that well of memory he kept plunging into during those months before he died.
And that's Michael Ondaatje reading from his novel, The English Patient. And Anthony Minghella, who directed the film, is with us, too. And Anthony Minghella, I'm wondering, when you read this passage, what impact it had on you?
Well, I think you can hear from that passage how you're transported into a world and into a situation which feels unique and fully formed and mesmerizing. And I think that my experience of reading the book was, in a sense, being hypnotized and, by the spell that Michael was weaving. And also, I think, just as a reader, not as a filmmaker, simply marveling at the quality of language.
Now, Anthony, you open your screenplay with a shot of the plane right before the crash.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a wonderful shot in the film. I'd like you to read the opening of the screenplay.
Exterior, the Sahara, late 1942. Silence, the desert seen from the air, an ocean of dunes for mile after mile. The late sun turns the sand every color from crimson to black and makes the dunes look like bodies pressed against each other. An old aeroplane is flying over the Sahara. Its shadow swims over the contours of sand. A woman's voice begins to sing. "Zerelem, Zerelem," she cries, in a haunting lament for her loved one. Inside the aeroplane are two figures. One, a woman, seems to be asleep. Her pale head rests against the side of the cockpit. Behind her, the pilot, a man, wears goggles and a leather helmet. He's singing too, but we can't hear him or the plane or anything save the singer's plaintive voice. The plane shudders over a ridge. Beneath it, a sudden cluster of men and machines, camouflage nets draped over the sprawl of gasoline tanks and armored vehicles. An officer, German, focuses his field glasses. The glasses pick out the markings on the plane. They're in English. An anti-aircraft gun swivels furiously. Shocking bursts of gunfire. Explosions rock the plane, which lurches violently. The fuel tank is punctured. It sprays out gasoline, then erupts in flame, engulfing both figures in a fireball.
Okay, so we can hear that the novel starts in a very reflective, quiet place with the nurse tending to the English patient. The movie opens in a much more of an action place with, you know, the plane being shot at. Anthony Minghella, why did you decide to open the film with this sequence?
Well, the film doesn't really open in quite such an active way as perhaps the reading suggests. It opens with a painting of a figure, and that figure starts to swim over a landscape, and the landscape appears to be sleeping bodies. Those bodies then turn out to be dunes, and then that picture is interrupted by the appearance of a plane. And I suppose that in my mind always I had this idea that given that the novel constantly asks you to reconsider events with new information, I wanted the film to state its terms very early on, that you were going to be asked to reconsider a certain number of events and to solve the puzzle of an image over the course of a film. So there's a stating of terms, I think, at the beginning of a film. And also, just in a very simple way, I think that story energy is very important in films. Purpose is important in films. Purpose is not the same thing in prose.
What I particularly liked about the first shot we see in the plane is that we could tell, you know, the woman's head is one of these like World War II open cockpit kind of planes. Yeah. And so we can see her head kind of sticking out of the plane and her hair blowing in the breeze, in the wind, you know, as the plane flies. And because of the angle that this is shot at, something looks terribly wrong, but we don't know what it is at first because it looks like she's just sleeping. And yet the angle of the shot cues us that something's really amiss, although we can't yet tell what that is. I thought it was a very effective shot.
It's very odd, actually, that that there's this difference, because I think Anthony is a much more philosophical and meditative person than I am, and I'm much more of a ham, and yet we've, you know, changed roles, I think, in the writing of each of these things.
Now, Anthony Minghella, you've said, and in fact you say this in the introduction to the screenplay, you say that when you decided to write a screen adaptation, you got a cottage in Dorset, England, and you holed up with zillions of books with research about World War II and bombs and life in Italy and life in the desert. But the one, you write, the one book I didn't take with me was The English Patient. I had been so mesmerized by the writing, so steeped in its richness, that I decided the only possible course available was to try and write my way back to the concerns of the novel, telling myself the story. Michael Ondaatje, how did you feel about hearing that Anthony Minghella took all these books except The English Patient he left behind?
Well, I think it was probably a very wise thing to do. I know, because I really do think, as I said, I mean, it's like I found this story in history and did a version of it. And I think for Anthony to tell the story in the best way, he couldn't go through this kind of keyhole that I'd already been through. It had to be another keyhole to find that same story. And it was a story that I'd partly invented, and he was free to tell his version of it. I think it was probably a very wise thing.
I'm sure you saw this. The New York Times ran an article not too long ago about the real Count Almashi, who the character in the novel and screenplay are roughly based on. And apparently the real Count was truly a spy for the Germans. And he was also gay. The passionate love letters he wrote were to a young German officer who tried to help avoid going to the Russian front. And apparently he was also a monarchist, obsessed with the idea of returning the Habsburgs to the throne. Michael Ondaatje, I'm wondering what it was that you wanted to borrow from the real Count, how much you knew about him, and why you didn't just create a character right from scratch and not even refer to anyone who existed in real life.
Well, what I've done in most of my books in the past is write inventions or improvisations, I suppose, of moments of history. And, I mean, the other books, such as Billy the Kid, or writing about Buddy Bolden and Coming Through Slaughter, or even my parents in a book called Running in the Family, I always begin with a kind of germ of fact. And I seem to need that to begin a story. And what I began with in The English Patient was this plane crash and this man burning in this burning plane in the desert. And That led me to desert exploration, and that led me to the Royal Geographical Society, where I'd heard about this man who'd taken, had taken a spy across the desert to Cairo. And that was really the clue into the this character. And at the Royal Geographical Society, what I discovered was a man named Al-Mashi, who was one of the quite wonderful desert explorers of the time, who was in love with the desert and just obsessed with the desert. So that's really all I knew about the man when I began the book. And, you know, since then, obviously, all kinds of things have occurred, some of which are true, some of which are not true. I mean, I still the versions I keep hearing from people who seem to know the story is that, you know, he probably wasn't a spy, but he had taken this man across the desert. And so, I mean, it's very difficult to, you know, bring these two things together, because for me, essentially, it's a fiction. And I made, you know, very clear that this is a novel based on a fragment. I mean, and I think one of the problems we have in our time today is that we seem to be obsessed with, you know, or we seem to believe that we go to the movies for a history lesson, you know, and I think we've forgotten that a movie like that Hamilton woman about Nelson is really not about Nelson. It's a dramatization. It's a fiction.
I mean, I think that there are some other things to say, because obviously the film is a fiction based on another fiction. But I think much more significantly, I'm sure there was nobody who went to see this film until those articles emerged who said, gosh, look what they've done to Al-Mashi. He's a very different man from the man in history. I certainly had never heard of this character before I read the novel, and I'm certain that nobody else in 99% of cases had ever come across this character. So I don't think anything Michael did subverted some understanding of who Al-Mashi was or changed history in any way. I think the other thing to note is that when Michael's novel was published, none of these unhappy people emerged from the woodwork to complain. I think it was the film that dragged them out. And they came with information that wasn't available either to Michael or to me. Mm-hmm. And perhaps the film and the novel might have altered if those pieces of information were available. When I was trying to do research on Al-Mashi, I found it almost impossible to find a single hard fact about him. But having said all of that, and that's our apologia, and I think it's a fairly just one, I still think that our awkwardness, and if you can hear awkwardness, I certainly feel awkward about this area, is because I think that both the book and the film are concerned with history. They are concerned with giving a history lesson. I don't think we should hide from that. I think it's just a different kind of history. It's not biographical history. It's not empirical history. It's an attempt to talk about the way that the behavior of individuals, the way that we behave towards each other, the way that we forgive each other, bless each other, curse each other, betray each other, are loyal or disloyal to each other, those things are what history is. It's not something going on somewhere else. And I think the film and the novel quite clearly catalogue the consequences of what Al-Mashi does in the name of love. He thinks he's doing something for somebody's benefit, and in the process tramples all over a lot of other people. As Caravaggio says to him in the film, because of what you did, thousands of people could have died. And because of what he did, thousands of people might have died. Certainly the people that we know and care about in the film have died, and he himself throughout the film is burning in purgatory for what he did. There's no sense of glorification of that action.
My guests are Michael Ondaatje, who wrote the novel The English Patient, and Anthony Minghella, who wrote and directed the screen adaptation. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Michael Ondaatje, who wrote the novel The English Patient, and Anthony Minghella, who wrote and directed the screen adaptation. So much of The English Patient, the book and the movie, have to do with the war, the way people survive war, what war does to them emotionally, and also with the kind of nationalism and patriotism and militarism of war. And I don't know how old each of you are, but I wonder if you have any war memories or if you have a lot of war memories that were passed on to you by family.
Well, Michael's 93 now, and it's amazing
that, many wars.
That he's ambient at all.
Well, I was born during the war, and I grew up in Sri Lanka. But then when I moved to England, in my teens, the mythology that I inherited in the movies, in the books around me, and even by people talking, was the Second World War. That was the mythology that I grew up with, as much as today would be the Vietnam War, perhaps, or the Gulf War. But, you know, I think what I was interested in was to write a book that was not a formal history. I think what interested me, and which is why I chose this character that I thought no one had heard of. I'm interested in unhistorical people, people who are not generals, they're not prime ministers, they're not recognizable newspaper figures. And I wanted to write a story about how something like a war affected people who were not just unknown, but almost on the edge of it, as they are in this villa hiding out in at the end of the Second World War. So that was what interested me, to tell a story and to have a group of people who have different opinions about nationality, different opinions about internationalism.
Well, some of the characters in your book are actually map makers, and they live in a place, they live part of the time in the desert where the line seems so much more arbitrary, perhaps, than in other places, because there aren't populations there, or not as big anyways, and because the sands are literally shifting all the time. And I wonder, being of mixed background yourself, because I think you're part Dutch, part Sri Lankan, part Indian, part British, what nationality means to you, if your own sense of your own national identity or mixed identity affected the stories that you tell in the English Patient?
I'm certainly interested in not in trying to explore what is outside the single point of view about the Second World War or the Gulf War, whatever war one writes about. I think growing up in Asia, I certainly was more aware of Asians like Kip and their role in the Second World War. I mean, for me, when I read all those books in the 50s, it was a very white war. It was about Englishmen who were the Allies and Americans who were the Allies. And Australians were never mentioned, or anybody else. And I think that what I wanted to write about was a group of people that weren't just famous and English. And I think Kip is someone who is, you know, brings another point of view about how one sees a war from a different angle.
And he is a Sikh who is working with the British defusing bombs.
Right.
At the end of the war. And Anthony Minghella, I'm wondering about you, if there's a part of this story about nationalism, patriotism, and war that you particularly identified with.
Well, I'm a mongrel like Michael, and I think both of us, I think what I recognized in his writing from the first time I came across it was a similar lack of assimilation. In a way, I think there's a prism through which he views the world, and it may not be the same prism as mine, but it's certainly refracted in the same way by different chunks of origin. And I think that he and I have discussed often what it means to be English, what it means not to be English. I think the game of the title of the novel, The English Patient, A Man Who's Not English, we discover, is a game that we played ourselves in the sense of how much we are English, what we understand by Englishness. And the film tries to pursue some of that. It also, I think, pursues certain issues of irony. And the film tries often to harness the irony that I discovered in Michael's book. I think that much as the characters eschew nationalism and tribalism, they're extremely tribal. Much as they eschew ownership, you know, Amashi constantly says, I'm against ownership, I hate ownership, being owned. And in fact, all he does in the film is try and own things and claim things. He wants Catherine, this shoulder blade is mine, it belongs to me. There's a constant tussle, which I think is a true tussle that we all feel, between the smallness that we celebrate and the largeness that we aspire to. I think that we are primitive, we are tribal, we do want to own things. That's what we struggle with, however large our intentions are, however international our aspirations are.
So where do you each go from here? Do you have other projects that you're working on? I mean, Michael and Daji, for you, this is kind of in your past. The book was published in, what, 92?
Well, in fact, it was very odd reading that passage because I haven't really read that passage for, I think, about 3 years. So I was almost stumbling. And, in fact, I haven't read the book since it came out, and whereas I have read Anthony's screenplays and seen the film. So it's... I don't really want to go back to the book, but I do have a... This is all just a memory for me.
May I say, when you go back to the book, if you go back to the American paperback edition, there'll be pictures of the two leading actors on the cover.
Yes, well, I have seen that.
But, is that okay with you? I always wonder how writers feel when their book comes out with the movie edition cover.
Well, you know, I have a kind of odd, things have gone in a kind of a circle for me, because when I was about 9 years old in Sri Lanka, I was taken to a movie of Scaramouche, and you know, it was such a thrill. I mean, my whole life changed. I immediately wanted to be a sword fighter, and I wanted to be Italian. And what I did do was, within about 3 days, got hold of the book and read it. And I'm sure that's probably one of the first books I read. So, I mean, if a movie got me to read a book, that was fine.
So you're going to collaborate again with each other, do you think?
Oh, I would love to, but, you know, I think we have to kind of also find our own path somehow. I don't know. But, yeah, sure, I would be thrilled to.
We were, and the truth is, on the way here in the car, we were discussing this very thing. And I for me, I can't think of anything better, because it's been it's hard to talk about these things in public, but this has been such a discovery, this process, a discovery of how you can collaborate, how it's possible to work with somebody else and to interact with them all for the good. I mean, I think all of our aspirations have been blessed, and so I think Saul is another part of that team that we wouldn't willingly let go of. At the same time, there are no such thing as arranged marriages, or they certainly don't work in films. And it's going to be hard for us, I think, to find a project which we are as passionate about collectively as we were for this one.
Michael Ondaatje wrote the novel The English Patient, and Anthony Minghella wrote and directed the screen adaptation. They spoke with us from the NPR Bureau in London. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.